Coppell's Western Cape Radio, CWCP, broadcasting from Worcester, South Africa.
Welcome to the Worcester Reports, a program of stories, Christian devotions, and music. Broadcast on CWCP, Coppell's Western Cape Radio.
South Africa, turn back to God. South Africa, turn back to God. South Africa, turn back to God. South Africa, turn back to God.
Today I'm sitting with somebody that I've wanted to interview for 2 years. I last was really talking to her when I came to the Boland Hospice, where we are now, and asked her if I might be allowed to volunteer to come up and speak to the patients and pray for the patients and so on. And she graciously allowed me to do that. So here we are 2 years later. Welcome to CWCP Radio, Alida Theron.
Thank you, Tony. It's a pleasure to have this interview with you. And I think it's important for us at Boland Hospice to put ourselves out there and to make people aware that hospice is not just for the dying, because that's the stigma that people have about us. So we're actually about life and giving people quality of life. So thanks for the opportunity.
Why don't we go back to the beginning? Tell us how this institution got started, and then we'll be asking you about how your own personal responsibilities. Yeah. You're the manager here, but let's hear some history first.
Yeah, sure. So way back in 2005, a steering committee met to discuss the needs of a community home-based care program and also an inpatient care unit that would serve the needs of the Breede Valley Municipal Area alongside the formal healthcare services. So in 2006, Boland Hospice was constituted as a NPO. So from there, we just evolved. There's been some bad times, but I think since 2013, we really turned around this hospice. And we expanded, not only serving the community of the Breede Valley, but also Witzenberg and the Langeberg area. If you allow me to give some information about what we do here at Boland Hospice currently, I'll start with the place. So our head office are situated in the town of Worcester, in the Western Cape. And then we serve the area here in the Breede Valley, which includes the towns of Rawsonville, De Dorings, Toos River, as well as Worcester. And then we also serve the community of Witzenberg, including Torbach, Wolseley, Ceres, Oppieberg, Hamlet, Prince Alfred. We really serve a great community. In Langeberg, we also have some counselors placed in the primary healthcare facilities and hospital, looking at the HIV component of our service. So that is our place in a nutshell, and it's really a large area. The people that work for Boland Hospice, currently we have 220 staff members. So we came from about 90 people and grew in the past few years to 220 people. We consist of professional people, including professional nurses, social worker, the doctors, physiotherapists, occupational therapists, speech therapists, dietitians, and we also have spiritual support. We've got our home-based carers. We've got support staff in the finance and admin, data capturing and fundraising. And then we also have volunteers like yourself that visits our facility. We've got different programs we manage for the Department of Health, and they're also our main funder. We receive about 95% of our funding from our partnership with Department of Health. This we call our bread and butter money. And so if we need anything else to put jam on the bread, we need to raise our own funds. If we want to buy new vehicles or stuff like that, that all depends on fundraising. We manage, I think I must elaborate on the seven programs we manage for Department of Health. We've got two home-based care services, one in Breda Valley and one in Witzenberg. We've got two intermediate care facilities, that's wards where we look after our patients, one in Worcester with 18 beds and one in Ceres with 12 beds. And then we also have three projects with counselors, one in Breda Valley, one in Witzenberg, one in Langeberg. Yes, and then our patients, like I mentioned earlier, it's not just for the dying, it's not just for terminal ill patients, but we look after patients with all kinds of illnesses and diseases. Maybe it's easier to say whom we don't look after. We don't look after pregnant women in our facility. We also don't take in patients that's infectious, like, for example, TB, and they're not on medication. And we also can't look after mental health or dementia patients. But sometimes we do. We evaluate if we can handle the patient, and if we have enough hands to handle the patient, we will take that patient in. But, we look after all kinds of patients here at Boland Hospice. And then we also use the approach of palliative care. And if I can say something to the listeners, please go and read up about palliative care. That's a very interesting topic. We can speak the whole day about palliative care, but I won't do that. But yes, we use the approach of palliative care here at Boland Hospice. And if I can explain it a little bit, it's like looking at the pain of a person. And we all know pain can be much more than just physical. It's also emotional pain, spiritual pain, or social pain. So here at Boland Hospice, we aim to look at the whole package. We have a holistic approach with all kinds of people looking after that and taking care of the patient using the palliative care approach. So our outcome, we wish to be that of quality in life, dignity in death, and also then support in bereavement. So that is our palliative care. So that is Boland Hospice in a very small nutshell.
I'm going to jump around a little bit because those things come to my mind. But as I've been coming and visiting, one thing that I noticed is quite a lot of patients have amputees. Some of them have no legs, some of them have one leg. And yes. I think I know why. Yes. But I'd like you to explain that to our listeners.
Yeah, so that was a difficult question when I looked at it before we started this interview. And I thought about it, and the reason why you see so many patients here at our hospice with amputees, it's mainly because they get referred from the hospital, either Worcester Hospital or Tigerberg Hospital, where they had these amputations, but they come to us for the aftercare. So we look at the wounds after the operation, and we also assist with the rehabilitation service of the patient. And then also we need to give some training to the families, because when this patient goes home, the family must be able to look after the patient and care for the patient with this new way of living without a limb. So yes, we do see a lot of amputees here with us. And that is also my link to the chronic disease of lifestyle, diabetes, lots of the times. And then also some are related to gangsterism, which plagues our communities. They will get a stab wound, they will just not recover from the wounds, and then it might lead to the loss of a limb. So yes, we do see a lot of amputees here at Boland Hospice.
And diabetes is a real scourge in this area, isn't it? That's
yes.
really what I thought was the main reason, but
yes.
you've made it
yes.
wider.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about diabetes here, because it's way worse here than in many places in the world.
That is one of the main diseases in our area. And I think it's because of the socio-economic situation our people find themselves in and the type of foods they can afford. Because lots of our people can only afford a bread, which might not be the best choice of food to eat. So, yes, diabetes is a main cause of concern in our area.
We work with children, and I see very young children putting 4 teaspoonfuls of sugar, or more,
yes.
sometimes 6,
yes.
in a cup of tea or coffee.
Yeah.
And this is can only be because the parents tell them to, because
yes.
children don't naturally do that.
Yes. And I think that I can link to our home-based care service, where we our carers go out into the community, and there we do care, prevention, and education. And there we must focus on educating the parents on better eating plans for their children. Yeah.
It's just people love sugar too much in this area.
Yeah, I do as well. Guilty.
Occasionally I try and talk to them. I say, you know, you can stop putting sugar in your tea. Just do it for 3 weeks and you won't
yes,
want it. You'll
yes,
hate it.
Yes.
But I don't have too many success stories
yeah,
to tell.
Yeah, but it's an ongoing educational process.
Yeah,
and
yes.
it's also just the change of lifestyle overall.
Yeah.
But it's difficult to manage.
Yeah. And there's a huge amount of Coca-Cola being drunk in this area. You know, on a hot day, they'll drink a whole bottle of Coca-Cola.
Yes.
And
yes.
you see these huge trucks coming by all the time.
Yes, for sure.
And to me, it's well, of course you're going to all have diabetes if you have that kind of a diet.
Yes.
So we talked about then one main illness, but there are other main illnesses that we see here, and I see them in the patients. What would you say are the 2 or 3 main illnesses that people get in this area?
It's very difficult for us because we see such a wide variety of patients here at Boland Hospice, but cancer is one of our main life-threatening illnesses we see in this area. And then we also have a high prevalence of TB and HIV and AIDS. That's very high. And then chronic diseases of lifestyle. And it's definitely hypertension and diabetes. That's some of the high diseases. And then I also think about children, malnourished children in our area.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've got lots of incomers into our areas to do some seasonal work, and yes, they live in very poor conditions in our communities.
Mm.
But there we see malnutrition as well. And that's also the kind of patients we can take in here at Boland Hospice to help the mother with the baby and to gain weight again.
Mm.
Yes.
Sometimes patients will be here for a while and then they'll go home for a couple of weeks or something.
Yes.
And then they'll come back again. It seems to me you take into account their home situations.
We
and
do.
Sometimes you want to
yeah.
give a break to
yes.
their caregivers.
That's quite right, and we call that respite. So we give a respite service for the families to give them a break, because it's hard work looking after a patient. Mm. And yes, also to give our patients a break from their families sometimes, you know, and also the situations they live in. Some really live in poor conditions, and especially in this hot, extreme weather, you know, they get problems with breathing, and then it's just easier if we take them in and we put them in our facility where the conditions are a bit better than at home.
Yeah. Somehow, though, even in hot weather, it's not too hot inside the wards.
No, no. We're very fortunate
yeah.
because you know our ward, and we're very privileged that our ward gets mentioned as a private facility or can be compared to a private facility. So, yes, we've got a nice ward inside with air conditioners, yes, and a very homely atmosphere with a garden, so the patients can also sit out in our garden.
The environment you create here is extraordinary.
Yes.
It's a peaceful... It's so conducive to healing.
Yes.
And the patients, they all completely appreciate it.
They do.
They do. They are so...
Yeah.
I tell them often, I say, well, if you're ill, this is the place to be ill.
Yes, yes. You know, we've got a saying, will I let my own mother come here
yeah.
and have service here? And if the answer is yes, I'm satisfied, because then I know our standards are up there. But if my answer is no, then I must start asking questions, you know, what's wrong or what can we do better? So for me, it's important. I must be satisfied that I will bring my own mother to come here
mm.
and just give the best we can.
Some of the patients are very poor. Yes. They come from local townships.
Yeah.
And what's the situation? Do they pay anything to come here? And do some people pay anything to come here?
So we're funded by the Department of Health. So those patients from those areas, they are government patients. So we're funded for 15 beds. We've got 18 beds inside where we can accommodate patients. Sometimes if a patient have a medical aid, we'll see if the medical aid can pay. But yeah, lots of times there's no money available or left over in the medical aid, in the budget of the medical aid, and then we take them in for free. And yes, that is part of our extra fundraising that we must do to take in and be able to care for those patients that cannot pay. And then we ask the families if they want to, they can give a donation.
Now, you're in the grounds of the Broelsgroef TB Hospital, one of, I think, five major TB hospitals in the Western Cape.
Yes.
And we've already mentioned that TB is very common here.
Yes.
What's the connection between you and the TB hospital, or is it just a coincidence?
Okay, so yes, that's part of the answer, and we're on the same grounds. But also, we've got counsellors based in the TB hospital doing counselling for the patients. And also when the patients get discharged from Broelsgroef, we can follow them up at home for a period of about 6 weeks just to make sure that they're okay. And then also we get our meals from Broelsgroef's kitchen, and we use other services such as the waste collection. So yes, we've got some things in common.
So you're partners
with
them in a way.
We're partners. Yes. It's the Department of Health, so we're very good partners, yes.
The food here does seem to be quite good.
Yes.
But I must admit, I thought it was being cooked here.
No.
It's all brought over.
It's brought over. The meals in between, like snacks, like sandwiches, we can provide. But the main meals are cooked at Broelsgroef.
I want to talk about your nursing staff, because every single one of them that I've ever seen here has exactly the right attitude. They seem to love the patients. They'll do anything for the patients.
Yes.
Where do you find these wonderful people?
Very difficult to find. yes, we've got challenges with staff. And I think our main challenge with staff is that we can't compete with market-related salaries. And we can't offer the benefits they get from government institutions like pension funds and medical aid. But the people here, that's here. If you work for hospice, there's just something that will make you never leave. Or you will leave, but you might come back someday. So we really have dedicated staff, and it's from the heart. You nurse from the heart. Because I'm sure they can find other jobs out there with better benefits. But the people we get here is really people that work from the heart.
Yeah.
But it's difficult. You can find them, but to retain them, that's difficult. Mm. Yes.
Well, they are clearly on a vacation. They're here not for the money. They're here because they feel that it's something that they've been... It's a calling.
Yeah, it's a calling.
And it's very obvious to me when I see this.
Definitely, it's a calling, yeah. Yeah, and I think it's a journey you take with the patient from the start till the end. And they become part of your life. And I know, you must be professional and you must have your professional boundaries. But you do get, like, if I can call it, attached to some patients and their stories and their families. They become your family. And they become your heart. So we're all very passionate about our patients and what we do here.
Two things come to my mind that totally different from one another. The first one is you've mentioned counselling. You have people go out counselling. Can you say a little bit more what kind of counselling are we talking about? Is it nutrition or that sort of thing?
Okay, so we've got about 45 counsellors in our service. They are based at the primary healthcare facilities, the clinics and the hospitals, and they're there to do HIV counselling and testing. That is their main priority.
But they are amongst your 200 or so employees.
Yes.
Right.
And yeah, then they do also counselling regarding chronic diseases, meals, healthy lifestyle, breastfeeding, any training we can give them and to help us assist and teach the community out there, they assist with. So, yeah, but their main thing is HIV testing and counseling.
Okay.
And to keep those patients to adhere to their medication. That's their main function.
All right. Now, the other question right now is, you have television sets in all the wards.
Yes.
And I don't know who decides what channel you're going to be watching. But I suspect that there is a medical reason that you do that. You're not just doing it so that they can watch their favorite TV shows. Am I right? Or
I think it's just creating that homely atmosphere for myself. And to put something out there for the patient, not just to lie in bed and maybe think about your bad situation or your own illness, but to take off your mind from that. And also it's an educational tool we have.
Yeah.
So we're not just limited to using the TV channels. We can also put in a USB stick and give a lecture about healthy lifestyle or eating plans or whatever the case might be. But I think the main thing is recreational for the patients.
And do you find that actually helps them? It takes away stress or... if it were me, having the TV on all day long would create a huge stress. Maybe you don't find that.
No, I don't find it. I think lots of the patients we see don't have a TV at their homes. So for them, this is a... it's a huge, I think, like an asset or a positive, because they don't have it at home. They don't know it.
Mm.
And they see another world by watching the TV. They come from very rural areas and they don't see the things we see on TV.
Yeah.
So for them, I think they see it from other perspective.
About 2 or 3 weeks ago, I happened to be in here for the final 10 minutes of the last test match between South Africa and England.
Yes.
And I actually saw the end of the match, so thank you for that, because I've been watching it at home. And
so it's been a positive for you as well.
I then knew who won.
Okay.
I was driving home afterwards and there was an announcement,
yes,
and they were out of date.
Yes.
They were still saying what was the situation half an hour before.
Yes.
I'm sure there are quite a number of therapies you use in your holistic approach, but a little later into today's program, Lorianne's going to be discussing the role of laughter in our spiritual life. So I can't help asking you, do you think laughter is something that's therapeutic here for your patients?
Yes, for sure. And not just for the patients. I want to take that back to the staff now. Because we as staff work in a very stressful environment with death we face on a daily basis and lots of hard things. So your laughter makes out a great part of our daily lives. We will laugh at simple jokes. And that is really the thing that carries us forward. So I think laughter is really, really an important part of our daily lives here at Boland Hospice.
One thing I have noticed, and I'm asking you if this is real or if it's my imagination, is most of the patients seem to be quite optimistic. They're not there shuddering with fear, even the terminal ones. They take it, they're stoical, even if it's a really bad situation. They are handling it in a way that surprises me.
Yes.
Is this just a reflection of the natural way of the local population, or is it something to do with the counseling they get, or what?
I hope that I can say that it's due to the fact that we practice the palliative care approach, where we use the whole team, and it's a journey, and we're very open with our patients. So we will tell a thing like it is. We won't lie to them. We will include their families. We will walk the journey. We will spend extra time sitting next to their bed and just making them feel human and giving them hope. So I think it's a lot to do with the attitude and of our staff as well and what our staff put into the patients. And just making the people feel loved and feel worthwhile and that someone cares about you. So yes, I want to link it to the palliative care approach that we practice here at Boland Hospice.
After I've just said a few words when I'm going around to bed by bed, I will always ask them, can I pray for you?
Yes.
So far, not a single person has ever said no to that.
Yes.
And yet you have different religions here.
Yes.
And but it's clear that they are eager
yes.
that someone would pray for them.
Yeah.
And that's a great joy for me.
Yes.
And it's not. I don't give them a long, long prayer or anything. It's
yes.
usually quite a short.
Yeah.
Just something so that they know that there's a God out there and He loves them and so on. That's my objective in coming here. Some of the patients who've been here for quite a long time, I've developed quite a good rapport with, and it's just, for me, it's just wonderful to come in. And I think of Moses, for example, who's been here for a long time. We've become personal friends.
Yes.
You know, I've been to his house, and
yes.
and I really enjoy that man.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they feel appreciated, and they feel that someone is putting something into me, and someone is visiting me. And I don't think they have that in their community, the support, you know, that they get here and the contact with people. I think people in very poor conditions and situations, they don't have a good picture of themselves. And when they come here, we build that up because we try to give them quality in life. And I think they appreciate someone coming to pray for me.
Mm.
Someone that wants to talk to me. So that's great.
Yeah.
I think that makes their journey easier.
What are you most proud of here in this establishment?
When I read that question, I thought about it's like asking a mother which child she loves the most. So it's very difficult to answer. But if I must put something out there, I'm very, very proud of the employees of Boland Hospice, and also that we're funded by Department of Health and that we put in a privileged situation and location where we can give and provide this fantastic service to our patients and where we can give a great outcome to them and give them hope. So yes, my staff, I think I'm the proudest of here at Boland Hospice.
Alida, thank you so much for giving me some time this morning. I feel complete now. I won't be coming here much more because we're back to Canada in a couple of months, but I will continue each week as I normally do.
Yes.
And it's been a very special place to come to.
Thanks.
I always enjoy, when I go away from here, it sets me up for the day.
Yes.
So thank you for everything you do every day of the week and to all your staff. I
yes.
appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thanks for the airtime. And thanks for your input here at Boland Hospice. We'll miss you.
Tony and I are Canadian missionaries in South Africa. We have learned through our African friends in different countries how to slow down and be relational. This is something all of us in fast-paced countries need to learn. So come along with me and we'll learn together on the adventures of growing in God. Growing in God through humor and positivity. My name is Lorianne and I'm a missionary. During my mission travels, I've ministered with people in Northern Ireland, Pakistan, Canada, and the USA. I've also ministered in African countries like Kenya, Ghana, Sierra Leone, Mozambique, South Africa, Botswana, and Namibia. But at this time, we live in the beautiful Western Cape of South Africa. During our last broadcast, we learned about growing through but God moments. These are times when our circumstances were dire, and then God intervened. We journeyed through the Bible, looking at Joseph's transition from the pit to prison to the palace in Egypt. We learned of Paul's experience on the Damascus Road, where he was transformed in a moment from a murderer of Christians to a strong one himself. Jesus' death and resurrection was a huge but God. Our faith is based on this ultimate intervention. I shared the personal about God's from Teresa's in a Texas mission where their extreme dependence on God is rewarded through many but God turnarounds. Finally, we shared our own but God's, partly on the financial provision for my cancer treatments, but also in our lives generally as a disabled missionary married to a senior citizen missionary. Often ministry is done through vessels that the world does not consider important or powerful. Paul shared in 1 Corinthians 1 verses 26 to 27, "Remember, dear brothers and sisters, that few of you who are wise in the world's eyes or powerful or wealthy when God called you, but God chose things that the world considers foolish in order to shame those who think they are wise, and he chose things that are powerless to shame those who are powerful." Sometimes the context of these but God moments are dire and difficult, yet while we wait for God's intervention, he gives us secret weapons. Some of these are mentioned in the fruit of the Spirit list in Galatians 5, verse 22 to 23. The Holy Spirit produces this kind of fruit in our lives: love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Note that joy has a prominent place in this list right after love. Joy has many forms. Tony and I are often reminded of the joy of the Lord, which is the fifth core value of Iris Global. The joy of the Lord is not optional. This is the same joy of the Lord that Nehemiah encouraged his people with in Nehemiah 8, verse 10. This verse is in the midst of a feast. He says, "Don't be dejected and sad, for the joy of the Lord is your strength." Joy is not necessarily laughter, but it can include it. This joy is a deep trust in God that cannot be shaken despite circumstances. The book of Philippians was written while Paul was in prison, and yet this book is nicknamed the Book of Joy. Paul had an unshakable faith and drew joy from gratitude that God is in control. He also drew joy from the Philippian Christians who saw to his needs and shone with love and faith. Joy can also be a weapon in that it shows that you are standing in extreme dependence on God. Other forms of positivity come as humor. Ecclesiastes 3 verse 4 reminds us that there is a time to cry and a time to laugh, a time to grieve and a time to dance. It feels good to laugh, to let go of stressors. The Mayo Clinic and others confirm that laughter is good for the body and soul. They share that a good sense of humor can't cure all ailments, but data is mounting about the positive things laughter can do. It stimulates many organs, including your lungs as you breathe, your heart, and the endorphins released in your brain. It even brings down your blood pressure and soothes tension by stimulating your blood circulation and relaxing your muscles. Long-term effects of laughter improve your immune system. Negative thoughts manifest into chemical reactions that add stress and decrease your immune system. By contrast, positive thoughts can actually release neuropeptides that help fight stress and potentially more serious illnesses. Laughter may also ease pain by causing our bodies to produce its own natural painkillers. Laughter helps you cope by increasing personal satisfaction and helps you connect with other people as you laugh with others. Laughter bonds you to them and helps relationships as you share stories with each other. Laughter improves your mood, even if you are struggling with chronic illness. How can you develop or improve your sense of humor? Humor is learned. Some people and cultures have very different views of humor. They laugh about different things. Just ask a stand-up comedian what one room, as they call it, may find hilarious. Another would see the comic as an offense or get angry, or they would have no reaction at all. But personally, we all have something we find funny. Often it's something that we share with family or an experience with friends. And we laugh best when we learn and grow from our own experiences. Try growing by increasing positives in your life. The Mayo Clinic folks suggest that if you put humor on your horizon by finding photos, greeting cards, and comics that make you chuckle, hang them on your home or office wall. Keep funny movies, videos, books, and magazines nearby when you need a boost. Visit a comedy club or look at joke websites. I found the Alpha Course jokes shared by the leader after the meal and before the presentation to be a time of bonding with the other attendees. There are websites devoted to alpha jokes, and Tony and I have our own arsenal of jokes, whether from Nikki Gumbel or other clean jokes we've picked up along the way. Laugh, and the world laughs with you. The world isn't laughing at you, except for mean bullies who are insecure in their own hearts. Find a way to laugh about your own situations as you look at them from a different perspective. One of my favorite counseling expressions is, call this a crazy thought, but have you considered looking at your situation this way? Often we get stuck in one line in our personal story that seems like it's perpetually under a rain cloud, and we're stuck in a groove like a needle on an old scratchy record. When you find a way to laugh about your own situation, watch the stress begin to fade away. See Jesus in the circumstance with you. Where is he? What is he saying to you in your situation? He is there. And sometimes you can remind yourself that this story may seem funny in a few years. Intentionally make time to see friends who make you laugh. Return the favor by sharing your own funny stories with those around you. You just may brighten them up and make their whole day. Check out joke and humor books in your local library. But it's important to know what isn't funny. Don't laugh at the expense of others. It's not appropriate. These include racial and gender jokes. Use your best judgment to discern a good joke from a hurtful one. Ask the Holy Spirit, does it lift up or does it tear down? Does it build confidence or batter the other in pain and hurt? Good humor is to lift up, as in good faith. So try laughter. We can even ask God to show us and bring us things that are funny and light to lighten our day. What is best is when we ask him to lighten our situation in our own hearts. It is to be reminded that Jesus does not leave us. Sometimes he even gives us a little prophetic glimpse of something that is to come. A child that we may struggle with at the moment may bring exasperation and even anger, but God can transform that child to become loving, joyful, and strong in the Lord. We are given hope as we are shown what can be, and we laugh because we know that this is in God's hands, not ours. Laughter and positivity in general also help me battle breast cancer, as it did for HS. If you have a chronic illness, it is essential to de-stress and keep positive. This speaks life to your good cells, so they have a chance to fight the cancer. Negativity feeds the cancer, as it increases the chemical reactions that cancer cells like. Bitterness and unforgiveness can contribute to cancer, as well as other unchecked baggage that poison the soul, and so the body as well. Jean Wise takes the Mayo Clinic staff view of laughter even further. While she agrees with all the physical and emotional benefits, she also believes it is a spiritual gift and a way to stimulate creativity. She believes that the joy found in laughter comes from God. It helps you recharge your focus and renews your spirit to find courage to face a tough situation. Listen to Zephaniah 3, verse 17. For the Lord your God is living among you. He is a mighty Savior. He will take delight in you with gladness. With his love, he will calm all your fears. He will rejoice over you with joyful songs. In some countries, people use the morning of April 1st as April Fool's Day. Sometimes these jokes are funny, but often some childhood pranks are not funny. They create baggage. Why not let these go by giving up that memory to God? And instead, laugh back at the bully. This is exactly what a radio host with a background of being bullied would do. Radio hosts are encouraged to use humor to build camaraderie with their listeners. As they laugh, they tell their friends who join in on a later broadcast. Radio people are people of story. But when we think about it, we are all storytellers. Even the character of the Doctor in Doctor Who, especially the 11th Doctor, said, we are all stories in the end. Just make it a good one, eh? The need for laughter is shared by many writers, philosophers, poets, and Bible writers. Ecclesiastes 8, verse 15 says, I commend mirth. Here is part of Gene Wise's list. E.E. Cummings wrote, the most wasted of all days is one without laughter. Children's author Dr. Seuss shared that laughter is the sun that drives winter from the human face. From there to here to there. Funny things are everywhere. Reinhard Niebuhr wrote that humor is a prelude to faith, and laughter is the beginning of prayer. Comedian Milton Berle said that laughter is an instant vacation. Bob Newhart wrote that laughter gives us distance. It allows us to step back from an event, deal with it, and then move on. Newhart's remark reminds me of the counselor reframe of seeing your situation in a new way and letting you rewrite the situation with you as victorious, laughing overcomer. Canadian author Mary S. Edgar chose the way of laughter when she shared this message. I will follow the upward road today. I will keep my face to the light. I will think high thoughts as I go my way. I will do what I know is right. I will look for the flowers by the side of the road. I will laugh and love and be strong. I will try and lighten another's load this day as I fare along. Ralph Waldo Emerson pondered on success in life. Laughter is an important ingredient. This is what he said. To laugh often and much, to win the respect of intelligent people and the attention of children, to earn the appreciation of honest critics and endure the betrayal of false friends, to appreciate beauty and to find the best in others, we must also leave the world a bit better, whether by a healthy child, a garden patch, or a redeemed social condition. This is also to know even one life has breathed easier because you have lived. This is to have succeeded. Emerson's success list is like a breath of fresh air that lifts our eyes from ourselves to others. And finally, Gene Wives' list ends with Tom Nainsbury, who said, "An optimist laughs to forget. A pessimist forgets to laugh." And so we should not forget, but make it a daily habit. Even Jesus had and has a sense of humor. Think of the way he used metaphors against the Pharisees to get them to wake up or to explain things. Eliezer Gonzalez shares that when you read through Jesus' teachings, you'll find a great wit, a masterful command of the language, a profound gift of irony and wordplays, and impeccable timing. These are all the hallmarks of someone with a great sense of humor. Then there was a considerable debate among early church fathers on laughter in the Christian faith. Jesus was hard on the Pharisees for their attitude and unbending ways, but in the Beatitudes, he turns the tables. Terry Linville of the C.S. Lewis Institute shares that Jesus promises laughter to those who suffer now. Laughter in itself is not a vice to be condemned. It is a reward for those who would follow Jesus. The significance of laughter is that it must know its time and place. Laughter is a reward of humility and utter dependence on God. It descends like rain upon a parched heart. In Philippians 4, Paul commands, "Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I say rejoice." He calls forth the heart to sing out with gratitude and laughter. G.K. Chesterton explained to C.S. Lewis how the laughter of joy is necessary. He said, "Life is serious all the time, but living cannot be. You may have all the solemnity that you wish in choosing your neckties, but in anything important, such as death, sex, and religion, you must have mirth or you will have madness." While some Christians now and in the past see laughter and joy on people's faces as sinful, particularly while in church, they are not seeing that laughter is a gift. Joy is a gift. The enemy of our soul seeks to take life and laughter from us, the abundance of life from us. Sometimes fun and laughter is tainted by sin, since we are born into sin. It's all around us. But laughter and fun are gifts from God. And joy, especially the deep joy of the Lord, is something to be treasured. The joy of the Lord is not optional for Irish missionaries like us. It's part of what keeps you going. That deep intimacy with Jesus and the laughter you share in the midst of difficulties. Garrison Keillor once said, "Some people think it's difficult to be a Christian and to laugh, but I think it's the other way around. God writes a lot of comedy. It's just that he has so many bad actors." But it is in being truly serious about our miserable condition and about the hope of salvation that introduces an unexpected surprise, comedy. The incarnation of Jesus Christ strikes a staggering blow at the Pharisees, the Gnostics, and anyone who denies the value of the physical world or those who try to be more spiritual than God. It is significant that for Augustine, the devil and the bad angels are without bodies. For the Christian, the comic spirit is one of new life, feasting, banqueting, eating, drinking, and playing. This paradise is regained, where heaven is described to be like a wedding feast or a sumptuous banquet. Even Israel was established on laughter. Remember when Sarah laughed when it was announced by the angelic visitors that she would have a baby in a year? This was a lady who had long given up, and yet the promise came. And then there is the laughter of true joy. Terry Linville shares that joy is the laughter of heaven, the secret of the Christian life. It is woven out of sorrow and woe. From the crucibles of suffering, absence, and separation comes the deep, abiding laughter of joy, without tears, promising health, wholeness, and reunion. The desire of joy haunted Lewis until he found its source in God. Lewis confessed that he didn't go to the Christian faith to be made happy, yet laughter, like music, percolates as thanksgiving and praise. Our enjoyment bubbles up and overflows with gratitude. In the Narnia Chronicles, whenever the children return, there are hugs and kisses and laughter all around, celebrating reunion. And then there is fun, the laughter of the earth, of our bodies. It's play in a great sense. We need to choose life and enjoy it. One thing about having cancer in my life is that it forces me to live in the moment and to take time to enjoy it as I can. The Westminster Confession reminds us that our chief end is to glorify God and to enjoy Him forever. This includes fun with the Lord. Eric Lindell said in Chariots of Fire, "I feel God's pleasure when I run." So we laugh when we enjoy God, and we know His pleasure. It's the same when I'm creating art, especially prophetic drawing. I feel the Holy Spirit's pleasure that I'm intent on capturing an idea or message that's from God's heart. Or even when I draw a mountain, God created both, and He helps me to recreate it. So laughter is good, and it helps us to grow in our relationship with Him. So dear friends, I thank you for journeying with me, and I trust that if you have trouble in letting go and laughing, that you will take this to God. He brings us the big and the little things. Sometimes He even brings things that make us laugh just to get us to stop and breathe. We're all just so busy. Instead of just stopping to smell the roses, stop to breathe, relax, and laugh. As you spend time with each other and Jesus, He brings times of shared laughter in the journey. Don't resist it. Lord, thank you for continuing to be on our journeys and bringing laughter to us and bringing humor. There is indeed a time to laugh as well as a time to be sad. Help us to choose life in the midst of hardship. Help us to stop for those life-giving moments with you. We trust that you will continue to give us those and to help us live that abundant life. We thank you in Jesus' name. Amen. Be blessed, my friends, and tune in again for Ways to Grow in God on Couples Western Cape Radio.
First verse of the 14th chapter of the second book of Kings. And he said, "But my brother Esau is an hairy man, but I am a smooth man." And he said, "But my brother Esau is an hairy man, but I am a smooth man." Perhaps I might say the same thing in a different way by quoting you those words of that grand old English poet W.E. Hindley, who said, "When that one great scorer comes to mark against your name, it matters not who won or lost, but how you played the game." But how you played the game. Words very meaningful and significant for us here together tonight. Words we might do very much worse than to consider. And I use this word consider advisedly. Because I'm using it, you see, in its original Greek sense of consider. Of putting oneself in the way of thinking about something. I want us here together tonight to put ourselves in the way of thinking about. To put ourselves in the way of thinking about what we ought to be putting ourselves in the way of thinking about. As I was on my way here tonight, I arrived at the station, and by an oversight, I happened to go out by the way one is supposed to come in. And as I was going out, an employee of the railway company hailed me. "Hey, Jack," he shouted, "where do you think you're going?" That, at any rate, was the gist of what he said. But, you know, I was grateful to him. Because, you see, he put me in mind of the kind of question I felt I ought to be asking you here tonight. Where do you think you're going? Very many years ago, when I was about as old as some of you are now, I went mountain climbing in Scotland with a friend of mine, and there was this mountain, you see, and we decided to climb it. And so, very early one morning, we arose and began to climb. All day, we climbed. Up, and up, and up. Higher, and higher, and higher. Until the valley lay very small below us, and the mists of the evening began to come down, and the sun to set. And when we reached the summit, we sat down to watch this magnificent sight of the sun going down behind the mountains. And as we watched, my friend, very suddenly and violently, vomited. Some of us think life's a bit like that, don't we? But it isn't. Life, you know, is rather like opening a tin of sardines. We're all of us looking for the key. And I wonder how many of you here tonight have wasted years of your lives looking behind the kitchen dressers of this life for that key. I know I have. Others think they've found the key, don't they? They roll back the lid of the sardine tin of life. They reveal sardines, the riches of life therein, and they get them out, they enjoy them. But you know, there's always a little bit in the corner you can't get out. I wonder, is there a little bit in the corner of your life? I know there is in mine. And so now, I draw to a close. I want you, when you go out into the world, in times of trouble and sorrow and hopelessness and despair, amid the hurly-burly of modern life, if ever you're tempted to say, "Stuff this for a laugh," I want you, at such such times to cast your minds back to the words of my first text to you tonight. But my brother Esau is a caravan. But I am a smooth man.
And that was Alan Bennett, a member of the cast of Beyond the Fringe, which was a very popular stage show in 1961, and I saw it, and we hope it made you laugh. I'd like to thank again Alida Thuren, the manager of the Boland Hospice, and invite you all to tune in again a week from today to hear whoever we have lined up for you. This is Tony Koppel, signing off. God bless you all.